Welcome to WMI Plus at Home podcast. I'm Gabby Sappington, the Executive Director of World Music Institute, and thank you for listening. WMI Plus at Home brings you into the personal environments of renowned artists from around the world as they share stories and music in an intimate conversation with a fellow musician, journalist, or ethnomusicologist. These talks were originally presented as live webinars, and you can watch video recordings of all our past at-home sessions on our website and YouTube channel. WMI Plus at Home is supported by a grant from Con Edison and world music lovers like you. We thank you and hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hi, I'm Ned Sublett. It's my great pleasure to talk with Daimé Arocena once again. I produced live appearances by Daimé several times in Cuba for our Post Mambo Cuban Music Seminars, and I've interviewed her several times as well. But my greatest pleasure is when I get to sit back and watch her just take the audience in the palm of her hand. I don't know if any of y'all got to see her shake Central Park up in August 2017, or at Pioneer Works the following year, or at her other appearances at Poisson Rouge in the space formerly occupied by the legendary Village Gate at Bleecker and Thompson. I'm delighted that she's coming back to Poisson Rouge, produced by World Music Institute, who have brought us so many memorable concerts in almost four decades of producing international artists in New York. Daimé's coming to us tonight from her home in Toronto, where she's been living since pre-pandemic days. Great singer, great songwriter, composer, and a lovable person who connects as an artist with listeners in a personal way. So, hello, Daimé.
Hello, my dear Ned. How are you?
I'm great. We've moved from pandemic to endemic, and we're slowly and cautiously starting to go back out again, but suddenly, like, there's action and energy everywhere, and people are going back out on tour, and live music is real again. I'm so excited.
Yes, totally.
How have you been dealing with the pandemic? What have you been up to?
That's not an easy question for an artist, honestly, at all. But I have to say that this pandemic have made me discover things that I didn't know of myself. I just discovered that I actually fascinated and so inspired through cinema and visual arts and stuff like that. So I started a project with my husband, which is called Adafia Films, where we started putting concepts together. We have been featuring different art festivals and cinema festivals and things like that. So it's been interesting because I saw myself without a band to perform, without a stage to perform. So all I had was myself, my husband, work, which is in a totally different way. He's a visual artist. So we said, okay, what we can do together in order to stay alive artistically, because that was the most important thing for us to do, to stay alive, to keep our soul alive. Without art, it's almost impossible for us to live. So this is the result. And we are, I can say that this pandemic gave me a new version of myself, and honestly, I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I think we're all a little different after this experience that forced us to look inside ourselves because we couldn't go out. Besides not being able to work as you're used to working, have you been able to keep in touch with your fans?
Well, social media is great on that. I have to say that I had to learn how to deal with social media. Before the pandemic, I had beautiful people around me to take care of that. But when the pandemic started, I had to keep the connection with my crowd, but at the same time, not just saying, hey, I have a gig or come to see my show, because I had no show to invite people to write. So I had to say, okay, people actually look at artists as human beings. People want to see how is your life, if you have a pet, what's the name of your pet, and if it's your mom's birthday, what you would like to say to your mom. Like, people want to see the human being behind the artist in the stage. And I have to say, I'm not the greatest on social media. Sometimes I forget to write something in a week, but at least I try my best to keep that connection with my audience. And I have been watching my audience grow and come and go. People that are like getting used to, you know, watching what I say or checking on what I think, things like that. So not just Daime as a singer, but also Daime about what she thinks or what she does and things like that.
Yeah, I found that I had more of a rigid routine in the pandemic than I'd ever had before. I'm like up earlier in the morning. I do certain things at certain times. And at 5:45, I do this. At 6:30, I do this. You find yourself, and musicians have to be disciplined because musicians have to practice.
We have a different kind of disciplines. In my case, I have a different type of discipline. For me, discipline is sleeping enough, organizing myself to have great sleep time, because, for example, my instrument is inside my body. So if I don't give rest to my body, if I don't give rest to my voice, it really damages it. People don't realize that the voice is the same one. You have got just one, and it's the same for talking, for laughing, for screaming, for absolutely everything. You are using your voice and is there, feeling anything that is happening in your body. So for me, for example, discipline is waking up and not talking for 1 hour. For me, discipline is drinking water as soon as I wake up. For me, discipline is staying silent when I'm on tour. In the times that I don't have interviews or I don't really have to talk, I try to rest as much as I can. So not going party after the gigs. I always get people so excited after the gig saying, Daime, we have a party, or let's go to this bar, or this great artist is playing in this place. And I'm always like, guys, I'm in the middle of the tour. I can't. I would love to. I have missed a lot of great concerts, a lot of great parties. My musicians are like, you missed this. I'm like, I know, but it's the only way to be in a good shape in a tour. Sometimes tours are really long. Sometimes tours are heavy. You have to wake up at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., to pick a flight, the first flight in the morning at 7 a.m. So people don't see that. People don't see the life behind just the moment of the stage. And that's the way to have discipline for me.
Mm-hmm. Have you been writing, composing songs? I know a lot of musicians I talk to have been, certainly, especially in the early days of the pandemic, people were just started composing a lot. And I know that recording studios have been banging away during the pandemic. Have you been writing? Have you been recording?
Well, I have to say that I never push myself to write music. It comes to me naturally. So I can write a song in an airplane or taking a shower, I can get an idea, right? So it's not something that I say, okay, Diamond, let's sit down and write some music. I feel it's a gift. And every single song that I get into my mind is a gift. So of course, being inside home for so long, is I have to say that it's not so inspiring, in my opinion, or at least in my life. But it doesn't mean that I haven't been writing music, because music is always around me. Music is, I always get ideas and I record them in a audio recorder, and I develop it, and I made like a draft of my next album, and I started looking for the right producer to work with, making some research. I got a lot of help from my band in Cuba to put this draft together in order to show it to the label to make sure they like the vibe and the idea of the next album. And now I'm ready to start recording. So
have you been sending tracks back and forth to Cuba? Or
Yeah.
How are the guys doing down there? I mean, how's the band doing?
It's not easy. In Cuba, it's more difficult. The guys are not haven't found a way to get a vaccine that is approved for the Organization of Health. I don't know the name of that in English, sorry. OMS, maybe, is something like that. No.
WHO.
OMS is in Spanish. WHO.
Yes. World Health Organization.
Okay, yes. So my husband was just saying that to me now. So it means that they are not allowed to travel to almost any country, which is a craziness for me. Also, the tour that I'm doing now, where New York is included, is the first time ever that I'm not performing with my band, which is a craziness in my mind. Like, I don't like to talk about it because I get kind of sentimental. Because they have been my family, they have been close to me always, and
they're also really good.
And also, yeah,
they are so good.
They are killer. I had my first rehearsal yesterday with the band that is going to substitute my band in Canada. And I was saying, guys, I feel like a cover band of myself. Like, oh. And I didn't mean to be rude at all. I just missed them a lot. I missed the way they played, the way they sound, everything. I missed them a lot. And they know that I value them a lot. And even though they are in Cuba, we have done a lot of things together, recordings for, we have been featuring other artists collaborations with people in Spain, in Colombia, in different places. So my guys have been recording music and sent it to me, and then I record the lead vocal and I send it to Spain, things like that. So we keep working. Actually, we just made a concert for Library of Congress of the United States. That was really beautiful. It was really hard to do. They were in Havana, I was here in Canada, so I had to record guidelines for them. They recorded the music, then they sent it to me. I had to record guidelines for me, so I recorded the voice. So we have trying to do as much as we can to together, even though we are not in the same place. The new global way to do things now is making more difficult that to be to together, to perform, to travel together. But at least we are doing what we can do for now.
I really do hope that we can get Cuban musicians from Cuba into the United States again. freely and easily sometime soon. It feels like we've been fighting this battle for decades, because we have. It's as long as I've been in this, it's been always a problem. Can we get the musicians in from Cuba? And, you know, the fact that you're in Toronto makes it possible for you to come here.
No, if now, I was in Cuba, I would not being able to do the Le Paso en Rouge gig for sure, and not any other gig in the U.S., like, forget it, or Canada, forget it.
But I just want to say that when you come to New York, even though you may be missing your band right now, when you come to New York, we got musicians here. And I saw Isaac Delgado 2 weeks ago at Birdland, and I went back three nights. It was so great. And Isaac, you know, who has a reputation for coming with great musicians, put together a band, people who live in New York and Miami and other places, and it wasn't the same as what he comes with in Cuba, but it was something new and interesting. It was within his sound, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what we come up with here. Now, the pianist is going to be Hamid Alom, right?
Yes.
I really look forward to seeing what he does with your music. This is going to be wonderful.
We know each other since we were pretty young. We met, of course, know each other from Cuba, and I'm also featuring a guy called Alberto Miranda on bass, and which is a Cuban bass player that have been based in New York for so long. Now he moved to a different city near to New York, but he has been around for a while, and a young guy he was born in Miami, but he's like American. He really knows Cuban music. He's in love with Cuban music. He's a drummer called Murphy Alcam, and I'm glad that I got the chance to put together a trio that fill a lot of boxes. So let's see. Anyways, I know that in the case of a salsa band or a timba band, you have a lot of pieces. So the music is going to be always rich and danceful. For the trio, it's more, how can I say this? It's more delicated. It's more, how do you say desnudo? I forgot that word. Naked. It's more naked. So I mean, I have beautiful and big expectations. Let's see how it goes.
It's going to be fun, I promise. I'm really looking forward to it. I want to know what the material is. Are you going to do new songs? Are you going to do your book? Are you going to do?
Honestly, I'm not going to play new songs. I'm going to play music from each of my albums. So I'm going to put together a show that has music from Nueva Era, from Sonocardiogram, from Cubofonía. Even I can try to put a one song from One Takes. An expected song of my discography.
You're going to do La Rumba Me Llamo Yo, right?
I will.
Obligatory. Obligatory.
Yeah, that's the song that I cannot skip.
It's a great song. I was wondering if you could possibly take a moment to talk to me about that song, which now I realize that people tuning in may not know it. So, and rather than me say the lyrics, maybe you could tell us the lyrics and kind of give us a little gloss as to what they say.
So that song, I wrote that song when I was on the road, working for a documentary that is called La Clave, that was made. It's divided in six episodes. You can watch the whole documentary on YouTube. It was hosted by Havana Cultura, And it was the documentary inspired in Rumba. So we were going to different places in Havana and different places in Matanzas to find the history of Rumba, to get information, to get inspiration, to get everything. So I was so amazed, so impressed, so inspired about all the Rumba vibe I was getting. And I just realized how much I am a Rumbera. Sometimes, I have to say I was younger than I am now. Sometimes when you discover things from different places, you kind of forget your roots. And because not because you forget them, it's more like you embrace other things that you learn from a different place, and you kind of put in a second place your roots. So I was too focused in jazz music and war music and things like that, and I didn't pay a lot of attention to my music, that is rumba and all of that, right? So that the documentary was a great chance for me to remember my childhood. I was born in a house that we were a lot of people, and it was a house of rumberos. When I mentioned my uncles, my cousins to big rumberos, everybody knows them. Everybody knows Marcos El Minio, El Negro, who was my uncle. Everybody knows Giovanni, who lives now in Italy, but he's one of the founders of Rumberos de Cuba. Everybody knows Marci Cimino. Like, those guys are my family. I grew up going to Ernesto Gatel, El Gato house. Ooh. every day, because he was my neighbor. He was at that time in a relationship with one of my cousins. Like, that was my childhood, right? Like, I was born in Santo Suarez. Like, that's my people. So making that journey was like, damn, you gotta come back to your roots. But at the same time, I didn't feel capable. I felt Rumba is such a complex and deep thing. I don't have the knowledge or the training to do that. And then I had a dream. In my dream, I got that song. So that I get a lot of music actually through my dreams. And that song came straight from the beginning to the end. Like, was like someone telling me exactly what I had to sing, what I had to say. And I woke up quickly. I wrote everything down. And that was the way it was born.
Wow.
That track, La Rumba.
I never knew that. I never knew that about that song.
That's the story. And I never thought it was going to be my biggest track. I didn't expect that, because I respect a lot of Rumba players. And I even felt ashamed to say La Rumba me llamo yo, because I feel that that's a big thing to say. But that was the way that spirit told me the song. So I didn't want to change what I got in my dream. Yeah. So I feel so good when rumberos, like all rumberos, tell me, oh, I love your track, or that's a great track. And people don't feel like she shouldn't say that in that track, because she's not a proper rumbera. People actually welcome the track in a beautiful way.
I just want to say that in 2018, Post Mambo, my company, produced a rumba festival in Cuba with 18 artists, El Rumbazo number 2. We had previously done another one. And the closing night was Daime, a special invited guest with Pedrito Martinez and his brothers, Los Hermanos Martinez. And I remember you saying, and I've heard it many times on the recording, I'm not a rumba singer. You said those words. And I was thinking, are you sure you're not a rumba singer?
I wouldn't say that at all. Like, for me, those guys are next level. Like, a little kid. What I do is that I try to combine my feelings, my energy. I try to listen. I pay attention to details, not just in rumba. I listen to a lot of music, and I try to reproduce that the way I can. But I don't consider myself a rumba singer, a proper rumba singer. When I listen to rumba singers, I'm like those guys are next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, could you? I do want to get you to tell us the lyrics to La Rumba Me Llamo Yo and tell us, kind of translate them for us.
Oh. Yeah, La Rumba Me Llamo Yo says is kind of my Ita Male, what my mother, Yemaya, my spiritual mother, let's say, the Orisha that I adore and I have crowned, said to me what was going to happen in my life. So she was telling me, that's why the song has like a lay motif, like is dice mi madre, like my mom says. So it's not my mom, the mother that had me inside her body. it's the spirit, it's the Odisha Yemaya. So she's telling me, she's giving me different advices, like take care. Let me think about the lyrics. Take care with people that are coming to you to give you shadow. And take care of, don't forget your roots, and don't forget that you can be a kind of a fine girl and let's say someone that maybe studied and are classical trained. But whenever you hear a drum, you're gonna feel it, and you're gonna feel the vibe, and you're gonna go to the bembe, right? Another advice, always pray to your spirits, to your eguns, always moyuba egun, like always pray for your spirits to go to the war with you. They will never let you down, and they are gonna help you to win every battle. They said to me, she said to me, what's the first one?
Dice, well, starts with, if I remember correctly, dice mi madre que el negro está regalado.
Yeah, that's a funny phrase. That was the spirit told me the lyrics. But it was related to the relationship that I had at that time. She said to me that the relationship is not gonna last longer. And honestly, when I got crowned, I had already 7 years with my boyfriend at that time. And I thought, like, why is it not gonna last? Like, we have been together for 7 years. It's okay, it's good. And I got crowned in April and we broke in November. So in less than 6 months, the relationship was gone. So that's one of the things she said to me. And when I wrote the song, everybody was like, oh, what diamond means. It's a pretty personal thing, but it came in the song. Yeah, so it's not related to Black people. This was related to the relationship I had at that time.
Then there's another line. Si tu fuera un hombre, tambor ser consagrado. Could you tell us? Because that to me is the core of the song right there.
So in the way we practice the religion in Cuba, that is a syncretism in between Yoruba practice and West African practices, not just Yoruba, but Arara, Lukumi, Karathali, like different tribes and stuff with Catholicism. Women are not allowed to get the power of Anya to play bata drums. They said only men are allowed to play bata drum religiously. So you can play bata drum if you're going to make a concert, but you're not allowed to do it religiously. And in my ceremony, they said to you, to me, oh, your saint is saying that you should be Anya, you should get your bata drums and you should play bata drums religiously. But because you're a woman, you're not allowed. And I was like, but if the Odisha is saying that, why you are saying I'm not allowed? She's saying I should get. So I was like, that's weird. But and that's the way it is in Cuba. And a lot of women have been fighting for it. And not just to be Anya, but also to be Iyanifa, to be able to read and make the divinations through Orulmila. Like, there are a lot of boundaries for women religiously in the way the religion is practiced in Cuba, sadly.
Yeah. So, and there is a movement of women, like you said, of women playing, insisting even on playing Anya, which is quite controversial, but women are doing it.
Yeah. And I'm with them.
So we've established that you have roots in this great African classical music. I think of the bata drums as great classical music from West Africa. It's a very, very complex and cerebral repertoire that has to be learned through years of disciplined study, no less than learning how to play an 18th century, 19th century piano sonata. But you also have this training. You went through the famed Cuban music education system. You had conservatory training. You can direct a choir, as I recall. How do these two work together in your mind and body?
Well, music, I realized so long ago that music is just one. For example, I was saying a few days ago to my husband, listen to the bata drums and then listen to Bach. And for me, for example, jazz music is where rhythms from Africa and harmonies from Bach, like a lot of things go together. They match and they work beautifully. So I don't see, I don't try to subdivide things. I get inspired from a lot of different ideas and music. And I believe people can hear that when they listen to my music, when they listen to my shows, because I can have a song that is more jazzy, or a song that is more classical, or a song that has big choirs, or songs that are more like rumba, right? Because I'm not close-minded at all. And I think as an artist, it's not an intelligent thing to do, to be close-minded, especially because we get inspired through the environment around us. Anything that can you put inside that boiling water to make your soup is gonna be awesome. It's gonna make it more tasty. So I have been just following my vibes, following my energy, following my thoughts, following my ears. Everything I listened, everything I get in my heart, I try to put it in my songwriting too.
And The other thing about this combination, though, is that it's not just you who has it, in the sense that Cuban musicians, almost everybody who had an education in classical music in Cuba, well, I shouldn't say almost everybody, but many people who've had an education in so-called classical music in Cuba do come from backgrounds similar to yours and have had and know the repertoire of the Orishas, as well as have studied jazz. There's an entire vast professional community of musicians who are conversant in these multiple languages at once, which to me makes the ensemble playing so powerful, because there's so many ways that Cuban musicians can communicate with each other.
Honestly, I have to say that the educational system of Cuba, talking just about music, is not focused at all in Cuban music. And no, it's distancing us all the time from it. It's mm-hmm. like, it used to be like the devil. you could face big problems in the school for just playing tumbaos or for playing rumba. And it is a big mistake. Everything you learn of Cuban music, you have to learn it in the street. You have to have this double school where you are learning Bach and you are learning Schubert and Schumann, Strauss, Brahms, and Beethoven and Mozart inside the school, and you need the other school in the street where you are learning tumbaos and rumba and rhythms and harmonies and jazz styles and Latin music and all of that. So I have to say that a lot of people that studied in classical music schools, they don't know their own music. A lot, like the bigger percent. Most of them, when they leave the school, when they are like, I mean, at the youngest stage, you are 19. That's the youngest you leave the school. They start looking for Cuban music at that time. And that's kind of late, because normally at that age, that there is already a big competition. So the hardest thing to do is to being able to combine your studies at the school with your studies at the street. And for example, in my case, I had to go to school from Monday to Saturday, from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. So I will go to school to learn classical music and how to conduct choir and how to conduct an orchestra for classical music. And I will go to jam sessions in the nighttime when I was a teenager with not even a age to go to nightclubs. But that was my only way to get both worlds at the same time.
Jeff Baker, the British musicologist who studied Cuban music, says that there's four sources that Cuban musicians draw on in different amounts: the conservatory, the street, the religion, and the family. And your family, I mean, now I know your father, who manages a nightclub in does he still? La Red, which was famously, it's a basement club in Bedado, where famously La Lupe had her moment of glory. So you've always had, I've always heard you talk about La Lupe.
Yeah, she's my queen. She's my queen. And when my father got that job, I was like, I can't believe this. yeah, of course. And La Lupe was just unique. She was unique. She just followed herself. And honestly, for me, it's so impressive to listen to a Cuban woman that will sing jazz standards with her own standards. She will use English the way she wanted. She would be always a Santiago Hera, even if she was singing in English or in Spanish, you'll feel that flavor. And she will make love with you. She will make you laugh. She will make you cry. She will make you get angry. She will be crazy about interpreting songs. She will be able to understand songs as an actress. She will interpretate music in like not just about singing, but about getting inside of what she was saying. And that's just...
That sounds like somebody describing Daimé Arocena.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's sweet of you.
It's 6:46, so it's time to go to the Q&A. We've got three questions here. Y'all go ahead and pop your questions into the Q&A, and we'll pitch them to Daimé. I'll read you the first three right up front. So I'm going to hit you with three all at once because they kind of overlap. One, are there challenges to incorporating your traditions in modern music? I missed part of it. Are there challenges to incorporating your traditions and faith into modern music? Let me hit you with three, and maybe you can come up with a composite answer.
Okay.
Two, could you please tell us the basics of rumba and where it fits in the larger context of Cuban music? And the third one is, who are some of your biggest musical influences? So, traditions and faith, rumba, musical influences.
Okay. And traditions and faith. I believe Cuban people in general should be aware, they should know that, for example, the Afro-Cuban religion, let's call it that way, the La Regla de Osha, is basically the religion that represents us as identity, like our identity is related to that kind of practices, the good things and the bad things and everything. The way we dance, the way we laugh, the way we speak Spanish, the food we eat, everything is coming from that big slavery that came from Africa, and that impact, that combination of tribes, and that combination with the First Nations that we still had, that people say they were exterminated, go to the end of the country, to Guantanamo, to Santiago, and see if they were exterminated or not. The Spanish people, the colonizers, with their culture and their music and their food and everything. So that's us. That's why, for example, we are not Yoruba. We are Santeros. It's a different thing. It's the combination of all of that. So for me, it's not difficult at all to put it inside my music. I'm not the only one. I think actually everybody does that. I think every musician, every Cuban musician, as soon as you discover it, as soon as you understand that, it's impossible to avoid it. I have listened to masses. I have listened masses dedicated to La Virgen de la Caridad del Cobre with Yoruba chants. And I have listened salsa and timba and rumba and cha-cha-cha, any kind of Cuban rhythms and genres and mambos that include things that are related to orichas. Everybody knows any kind of Latin jazz songs from the first guys, let's say, from the first big guys like Mongo Santa Maria or Chano Pozo, to Chucho Valdez, to, I mean, everybody. It's not me. I'm actually like a, like the younger generation doing that. But actually, I'm just imitating them.
You're continuing.
I'm continuing that legacy. But that's what you get in the package when you were born in Cuba. It's like, that's yours too. Take it and use it.
Okay, now bring the rumba into this.
Okay, so rumba.
Tell them what rumba is. Give them a sense of what you think rumba is.
Rumba is probably the most beautiful expression of Cubanism, let's say like that. You know what? I feel so close to rumba because it's where you see our more naked version of ourselves. It's like we are not trying to pretend something we are not. This is who we are. Like, it's not about people dancing or playing fancy stuff or being in a salon. It's people being relaxed. It's people being chill. Actually, the rumba clave, I have listened to a lot of Afro beat music and African music, like especially contemporary dance floor Afrobeat music. And I always say, like, oh, we call the Cuban clave this African clave, pam, 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 right? But the rumba clave is actually relaxed. And that pam, 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 pam is just relaxation. It's like when you are like, oof, there is nothing to pretend. There is nothing to, it's just me. And take it or leave it, like it or love it, I don't mind. And honestly, that freshness, that natural way to do things, to see life, it's just amazing. It's so catchy. So I have to say it's a complex rhythm because it's not about freedom. It's about freedom of rhythms and dancing and expression. And when you listen to all of that from the stereo, you're like, what's going on there? It's like, what's going to happen? People that are not from Cuba, and even some Cuban people say, like, I don't even know where to dance. I don't even understand where's the tempo. It's like, that's crazy. It's just because it's like a game where everybody can play their own game. But when you put it all together, it works out. And
the magic of clave. So musical influences. Now, you already mentioned La Lupe. We already talked about that. And you're from Santos Suarez, where a very famous Cuban singer was from.
Yes, I know. And I have to say, I was listening a few days ago. I was reading a few days ago that Celia Cruz was stolen from us. And not in a weird way. Was stolen because we weren't allowed to listen to her music in Cuba. So was stolen from our own culture. We weren't allowed to enjoy the music of that woman. And the world was saying, she's the queen, and we didn't even know. Like, it's a craziness, and it's sad to say that. And sometimes people ask me, is Celia Cruz a big influence of you? And I feel like, actually, I should know more about her. I should listen more of Celia Cruz music. And I'm doing it now because I want. It's still not easy to find music of Celia Cruz in Cuba. You don't see anything of her on TV. She's not allowed. I mean, of course, she's passed, but she's not allowed to be played in nightclubs or things like that, which is absolutely a shame. And it's something that I will always point to the Cuban dictatorship away. They shouldn't do that at all. But on the other hand, I have to say that I'm glad to know that we had such a queen coming from our land and representing us, embracing our name, embracing our culture, embracing our freedom, embracing of our religion practices, embracing everything that we were as a nation, as a cultural nation. So, of course, inside my feelings, inside my blood, of course, Celia Cruz is a big influence. And she's an influence of resilience, and she's an influence of powerful woman, saying what she had to say, thinking the way she thought she had to think, and staying true to herself. And I have to say that my other big influence is not a Cuban woman, but is a woman too. And it's called Nina Simone, is my other queen, my big queen, and my queen. I just feel like Nina could sing any song and she would do it amazing, because she could take the spirit of the songs. She will see, she could see the spirits of the songs, and she will take that spirit inside her body for each song, and she will deliver the song in the way that just her could do. So I always get so emotional about Nina Simone. And my biggest inspiration that is alive is called Marta Valdez. Is another big woman. Oh. I'm a fan of big women. Marta Valdez is my favorite songwriter of Cuba. It's a dream come true that she's alive here for us, for the younger generation of Cuban songwriters. She's listening to everybody. She pays attention to any kind of music. She is there active on social media. She knows what you sing. She knows what you compose. And honestly, if I get over 80 years old, I want to be like her.
Have you gotten to hang out with her or talk with her? Have you got a Marta Valdez story?
I'll tell you a story about Marta Valdez. The first time I met Marta Valdez, I was 17 years old. She went to Amadeo, to my conservatory, and the director of the school told me, "Daime, I know you wrote a choir piece that is inspired in the Orisha Ochun, which is part of my trilogy of the latest album." That trilogy, I wrote it when I was 17 years old at school, for a choir, just for a choir.
Wow.
And he said, "I would like to show this piece to Marta Valdez. And also I would like you to learn a song of Marta Valdez and sing it for her." And he gave me the mission to learn En la Imaginación, which is an absolutely difficult song. And he wanted me to sing it a cappella. If people know Marta Valdez song, they should know they are heavy. Difficult harmony, like difficult. So I standed up, I sang the song, so nervous. And then because I heard that she was really tough with people singing her songs, so I was so nervous. And then I had the choir set up ready, and I did my piece for the Ochum part of the trilogy. And she came to me and she said, "I'm pretty sure Ochum listened to your piece in the where she is." And I was like, because I was just 17 years old, I was a kid, right? And that woman was telling me that, and I was like, whoa, she liked my piece, but she didn't mention anything about her song. Few years later, like 5 years later, I came back home and I was listening in the voicemail all the messages I had. And one of the messages was like, "Hello, my name is Marta Valdez." I'm telling you, like 7 years later, My name is Malta Valdez. I found your phone. I requested and I got it. And I just want to say that I'm a big fan of your songwriting. And I was like, this is not truth. Like, this is not truth. So I called back the number. Like, I thought it was someone making fun at me. And when I realized it was her, it was like the craziest moment of my life. It's like, shit, my favorite songwriter ever called me to tell me this. Like, this is crazy. So she invited me to her house. And no. I spoke with her. She told me beautiful things. I was so amazed about that. And a few days later, I had a concert. There was a concert that I conceived for just bass and voice. So I wrote 10 songs for bass and voice.
I love that combination.
It's a beautiful combination. And I made it with a double bass player from England called Tom Mason. And she didn't tell me anything. She came to the concert kind of in secret. Like, she came to the concert. She watched the whole concert. She came to the backstage. I was so crazy when I saw her in backstage. She invited us to her house. And she made like a blessing, like a ceremony of blessing for us. And I just said to myself, I cannot believe that such a songwriter like her, that is actually 80 plus years old, is listening to people, to young people, is paying attention to young kids. And later on, I still have been discovering that Malta is following people that is actually younger than me, that are not, let's say, they are not on TV, they don't get like big exposure, and they get that kind of calls from Malta Valdez too. So it's like that woman will be always my hero, because she is paying attention to everybody that has an idea to put musically. And if she likes it, she will let you know. So it's a great way to show people humildad, to being humble. It doesn't matter how big you are, how great you are, how old you are, how much people should respect you. She's still being so humble and so beautiful.
I just love talking to you. I never know what I'm going to find out, what I'm going to learn from you. I've learned so much talking to you over the years. We're an hour into this conversation already, and which means our time's up. We have one more question. Please talk about two songs I love, Todo Por Amor and Lo Que Fue.
So I have to say that Lo Que Fue is a song that I wrote for that ex story that I told you. It's a song that is just saying the truth. Like, sometimes you make a decision, you say, everything is going good, but honestly, I'm done. And people don't understand because it's hard. Breaking up a long-term relationship is difficult. So, you know, people are like, she's mad and she's bad because she left me. And I'm saying, no, you forgot all the things I did, all the time I were there for you. And you didn't notice it. So now it's my time to go. So it's just a love song that I wrote for Annex. And another song that is Todo Por Amor is a song that I wrote for my parents, for my mom and my dad. They just got together 30 years of marriage 2 days ago. So I remember when I wrote that song, I was on the road, and I believe they were actually celebrating anniversary. And I feel like, whoa, it's crazy to be together with the same person for so long. But at the same time, it's beautiful. And I got that idea of that song, and I felt it was just a nice gift I will give to them. So, yeah, that's the history behind Todo Por Amor.
Well, we have come to the end of our time. Is there anything else you want to, any last words you want to say before we take it out?
All I want to say is please keep supporting artists. Please keep supporting musicians. Please support Cuban musicians. We need you people. We need you to keep shining. That's all I have to say.